for the free meal program. With these various efforts, the Financial Services Authority is optimistic that it can realize the government's target of Indonesia becoming a developed country before 2045 and forming superior and quality human resources. Dora Pardede for Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Now we have information about analysts that suggest Indonesian government more creative in bringing investors. An Indonesian economic analyst suggests the Indonesian government more creative in bringing investors, include providing incentive and reliefs. Rama Sidki has the details.
Indonesian economist Gunawan Benjamin encouraged the Indonesian government to be more innovative in attracting investors to the country. In an interview with the RRI Voice of Indonesia on Wednesday, February 12th, about Indonesia's 2025 investment outlook, Benjamin highlighted efforts such as providing incentives and relief, in addition to targeting investors from countries with potential to invest in Indonesia.
Even though it is actually difficult to attract investors, there are members of EPOS that can be tried, such as maybe providing incentives in special economic zones, relief for labor-intensive industries or other service companies, and economic efficiency.
Benjamin emphasized that investment is crucial for Indonesia to remain optimistic about achieving economic growth this year. He pointed out several sectors expected to grow in 2025, including agriculture, food and beverage, and accommodation. According to him, the free nutritious meal for school children program, a landmark initiative of Prabowo Subianto's government, will have a significant impact on the growth of the sectors.
Let's move on to our next info, where Indonesian Ministry of Culture emphasized the preservation of Pantun as a world heritage. Indonesian Minister of Culture Fadlizon emphasized that Pantun, or traditional Malay oral poetry, is not merely a form of entertainment, but also has historical and educational value that strengthens national identity. Ofra has the details.
The Indonesian Ministry of Culture has revamped its commitment to preserving Pantun, or traditional Malay oral poetry, as an intangible cultural heritage of the world. This statement was conveyed by Minister of Culture Fadlizon at the International Pantun Nusantara Seminar, Team Cultural Strategies for Preserving Heritage in the Digital Era, on Monday, February 10th. He stressed the importance of preserving the existence of Pantun amidst modern developments.
Pantun jelas sudah menjadi bagian dari tangible cultural.
Pantun has clearly been part of the intangible cultural heritage of the world since 2020. It has flourished in a long tradition, and I believe it is an integral part of our nation's cultural wealth, especially in our oral tradition.
In his speech, he also explained that Pantun is one of the traditional literary forms that has long been embedded in the lives of the Indonesian people. Beyond mere entertainment, Pantun serves as a medium for transmitting cultural values, moral teachings, and education across generations. In Indonesia's multicultural society, Pantun also acts as a bridge connecting differences, strengthening unity, and enriching national identity. Ofra reporting.
Our next info is about Chinese-Indonesian heritage exhibitions that opens in Jakarta. Rama Sidki has the details.
Indonesian Heritage Agency opened a temporary exhibition on Chinese-Indonesian heritage at the Indonesian National Museum in Jakarta on Monday, February 10th. The exhibition, titled Gongsi, Chinese Acculturation in Nusantara, features artifacts across Indonesia, including sculptures, fashion, and historical items influenced by the Chinese. Indonesia's Minister of Culture, Fadlizon, in his remarks said, the exhibition showed the significant influences of Indonesia's Chinese communities on the country's life.
For centuries, Indonesia has been a meeting point of civilizations where cultures merge and evolve. Among the most significant influences is the rich legacy of the Chinese community, whose presence in the Nusantara dates back over 1,000 years through trade, migration and cultural exchange. This exhibition is a testament to a long history of cultural fusion that has enriched our traditions, language, arts, cuisine, and way of life.
Fadlizon added that the exhibition is not just a reflection of the past, but also a reminder that Indonesia's strength lies in its diversity. He hoped the exhibition could inspire visitors to preserve and celebrate cultural acculturation. Fadli also said that the exhibition will last for 3 months to come.
Coming up next, information about Vietnam that remembers Indonesia's support in their national struggle. Vietnam has once again expressed its gratitude for Indonesia's support during its national struggle. Vietnamese ambassador to Indonesia, Thach Pham Thong, highlighted Indonesia's crucial role in mobilizing international support during the Vietnam War. Ofra has the details.
Vietnam has revamped its appreciation for Indonesia's support in its national struggle. This was conveyed by Vietnamese ambassador to Indonesia, Thach Pham Thong, during the embassy annual press meeting on Wednesday, February 12, 2025. Emphasized Indonesia's role in garnering international support for Vietnam during the Vietnam War.
Indonesia always stood behind Vietnam and mobilizing the support from the non-aligned movement, about 100 countries, to support Vietnam during the Vietnam War. So we, the government and the people of Vietnam, have been always very grateful to the wholehearted support of the leaders and the people of Indonesia for our struggle for national reunification. And during that time, you know that President Ho Chi Minh visited Indonesia as early as in 1959.
As part of the non-aligned movement, Indonesia played a significant role in mobilizing support from around 100 countries for Vietnam. This support was a key factor in Vietnam's struggle for national reunification. Additionally, the strong relationship between the two countries was reflected in President Ho Chi Minh's visit to Indonesia in 1959. To this day, Vietnam and Indonesia continue to strengthen their cooperation in the spirit of friendship and solidarity. Ofra reporting for Voice of Indonesia.
Next info is about Prabowo and Erdogan hold Strategic Cooperation Council meeting in Bogor, Indonesia. President Prabowo Subianto welcomed Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan at the Bogor Presidential Palace. The two leaders held a high-level Strategic Council meeting and discussed ways to strengthen the partnership between the two countries. Andi Romdoni has the details.
On Wednesday, President Prabowo Subianto welcomed Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan on his state visit to the Bogor Presidential Palace in West Java. During the meeting, the two leaders held their first high-level Strategic Cooperation Council session. In a statement after the meeting, President Prabowo explained that this strategic meeting is the highest bilateral mechanism between the two countries. Today, President Erdogan and I held the first high-level Strategic Cooperation Council meeting. This is the highest bilateral mechanism of relations between the two countries. During the meeting, the leaders also discussed cooperation in areas important to both nations, including the economy, trade, defense, security, and health. President Prabowo further explained that both leaders shared similar views on the situation in Palestine.
Di bidang hubungan internasional, kami menegaskan bahwa Indonesia dan Turkiye.
In the field of international relations, we emphasize that Indonesia and Turkiye share the view that the solution to peace in Palestine is independence for Palestine with a two-state solution. President Prabowo Subianto also mentioned that President Erdogan's visit marks the 75th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Indonesia and Turkiye. He noted that the two countries have built a special spiritual and emotional bond over centuries. The visit, according to President Prabowo, marks a new chapter in their strategic partnership and sets the stage for celebrating 100 years of relations in 2050. Andi Ramdoni reporting.
Last but not least, we have information about all staff of Nusantara Capital Authority that will move to IKN in March 2025. With the completion of the construction of the Nusantara Capital Authority office, all staff of the authority will move to IKN Nusantara Capital City in March 2025. Dora Pardede has the details.
Head of the Nusantara Capital Authority, Basuki Hadimulyono, revealed that the construction of the authority office will be completed by the end of February. This was conveyed by Basuki Hadimulyono in a working meeting with Commission 2 of the House of Representatives in Jakarta Wednesday. Basuki Hadimulyono explained that with the completion of the construction of the Nusantara Capital Authority office as of March 2025, all activities and staff member of the authority will be moved to the Nusantara Capital City.
We'll program all activities of the Nusantara Capital Authority to be done in the Nusantara Capital City. All members of the staff are the authority who have been working in three places, Jakarta, Balikpapan, and Nusantara. With the completion of the office as of March, we'll move all of them there.
Basuki Hadimulyono further explained that the transfer of activities and staff of the Nusantara Capital Authority to Nusantara Capital City was carried out so that they could focus more on the construction of the Nusantara Capital City. According to Basuki, the staff of Nusantara Capital Authority will later live in 4 apartments that have been constructed.
Well, listeners, that was some information that happens in Indonesia this week on Highlight of the Week.
Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services, English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast by shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz and via streaming on voanews.id and RRI Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you. Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Before we're moving on to our next info, let's listen to a song. Indonesia is coming up shortly. Stay tuned with us, Voice of Indonesia. Welcome back, listener, and thank you for staying tuned in Indonesia Today. Every February 9th, Indonesia commemorates the National Press Day. However, how is the current press situation in the world? Let's get some insight about the situation, challenges, and opportunities for press in the international community in this edition of Morning Talk, taken from Live Dialogue on Tuesday, February 11, 2025.
Voice of Indonesia.
2 days ago, Indonesia commemorated the National Press Day. And I'd like to apply you first the address made by our President Prabowo Subianto.
Selamat Hari Pers Nasional ke-79 kepada seluruh insan pers di Indonesia. Selama 8 dekade ini, pers Indonesia telah menjadi pilar penting dalam kehidupan demokrasi, menyuarakan kebenaran dan memberikan informasi yang akurat kepada masyarakat Indonesia. Saya apresiasi kerja keras para jurnalis, wartawan, dan insan pers dan media yang terus menjalankan pengabdiannya dengan dedikasi tinggi, meskipun tantangan yang dihadapi semakin kompleks.
So that's the address by our President Prabowo Subianto, apparently on the YouTube channel of the Presidential Secretariat. He made a 4-minute address, but we just took it several seconds about it. He highlighted the role of Indonesian journalists so far and promote, not only promoting, but also safeguarding Indonesia. And at some news outlets, they highlight more about his address related to hoaxes. But today, listener, we are not only going to talk about the press in Indonesia. We're going to talk about the press in the global perspective. With the three guests has been joining us, two from the Zoom and one in my studio. And the first, I would like to say hello to Ibu Devi Yanti Farid, a journalist from Voice of America. Good morning, Bu Devi.
Good morning.
And I'd like to also tell everybody that in my studio, there is a student of media and communication from Australia, Roa Ahmed. Hello, Roa.
Hi, how are you?
And also, Bapak Munadil Amuksi, the head of Communication Sciences Department from UPN Veteran Jakarta. Good morning, Pak Munadil.
Good morning, everyone.
Okay, so I'd like to begin with Ibu Devi first. So, Bu Devi, I would like to know, in America and Indonesia and Australia, we have different perspective about press. And I'd like to know, the first one coming from America, how is it in America?
Well, the press is seen as the fourth estate in the European context. You know, there's the commoners, there's the clergy, there's nobility, and then there's fourth is the press. So they hold accountability of officials who basically govern the state. The press holds the watchdog role. So investigative journalism, you know, they are very, very important to uncover corruption, abuses of power, unethical behavior in government and private institutions. They also, you know, inform citizens, inform decision making, because a well-functioning democracy relies on informed electorates. They use the news, the analysis that they watch on all forms of media to really be able to make a decision, especially during the elections. They also provide a platform for debate and free expression because the press facilitates discussions on those important social issues. They also ensure that the government is transparent. There's the Freedom of Information Act in the U.S. that empowers journalists to access government records, ensuring public scrutiny of policies and decisions. And they also basically expose misinformation and protect the truth. That's basically what the press is around the world, including in the United States.
Okay. And I'd like to have some comments from Roa, what about in Australia? I mean, some Indonesians think that Australia is also a Western country. Is it the same like the ones we have in America and Europe?
Yeah, it's very similar to what Ibu Devi has been saying about the press in America. In Australia as well, considering it's a multiculturalism Australia kind of where it's not just a country, it's a whole continent with lots of voices. So I feel like the press plays a vital role in like representing all of those voices that we have, and as well, not just on an international level, but on a national level as well. We, as for example, people who live in Sydney would like to know about people who live elsewhere in another state in Australia. So the press plays a role in educating us about the whole of Australia, and in the same time representing voices from around the world. It also plays, as Ibu Devi said, it plays a vital role as well in elections, referendums, to just like inform the public about what is going on and hold politicians accountable as well.
Okay, but do you also, do journalists in Australia also scrutinize the government, just like...
Yes, we have the code of ethics, which includes, which is from MEAA, which is Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance, which holds journalists, both journalists accountable for accuracy and obviously trustworthy journalism, but then we have the freedom of expression where gives the journalists or gives all media experts the freedom to expose the government or expose any politicians about misinformation, disinformation, or just like policy reforms in general.
And Pak Munadil, is it the same as we have in Indonesia now?
I think overall is in over the world is same. Yeah, media have the same things and the same objection. Yeah, a lot of people searching information about the election and about the what happened today from media. But now it's very interesting. I have one research. To collect data from the millennials, yeah. Most of them, they seeking information from media sources. So not only media mainstream, now they seek information from the TikTok and then from the X and Instagram. Now they shifting information because we know that Indonesia is one of the big country who have millennial and Gen Z, and now they shifting it. Not on media traditional. They maybe some of them seeking information in the Instagram platform. Like you have Instagram platform, yeah. Like that. Indonesia now have a very interesting shifting media ecosystem right now.
Okay, and we'll talk more detail about between the conventional media or the mainstream media with the social media, but I'd like to go back to Ibu Devi. So everyone, we have been comparing between in America and Australia and also in Indonesia, and there seems to be a lot of similarities between the three of us, but I would like to know, in reality, is all that is realized, or is there any challenges against dysfunction and also the freedom of press, Bu Devi?
Well, the press itself is does face several challenges, and in one of them that basically you can find anywhere in the world, in every newsroom, is bias. And that is something that every journalist has, because we're all humans. We do have opinions of our own, and it's up to us to be able to hold each other accountable in trying to be more objective in our, you know, coverage of several issues, and try to our best to balance and really share both sides of the story, because everything in life can be seen in different perspectives, and we as the press need to be able to highlight those differences and basically give that opportunity to the people, the consumers, our audiences, to make an informed decision. And another challenge that the press also does face is, you know, censorship. It doesn't have to be a government censorship. It could be also something that they face in their own newsrooms, whether it is indirect or direct. And there's another challenge is the press in Indonesia. A lot of my friends can attest to this, is, you know, they sometimes face the challenge of being able to live a normal life in terms of they're able to afford the simple things, and have a salary that is sufficient. And that's what I've heard that some journalists face, especially those living in the regions. So there's the economic challenges as well.
Okay, not only in the newsroom, but also the economic challenges. What about in Australia, Roa?
This is very similar to Australia as well. The press, I think it's facing the issue of censorship, not as Ibu Devi not said, not just from the government, but as well, we have an like the bias reporting as well. We had like an incident at ABC News where one journalist shared two articles. One was on Ukraine and Russia, and the other one she didn't specifically share an article, but she shared something on social media regarding Gaza genocide, and then immediately got fired for that. But when she shared about Ukraine and Russia with a biased opinion about Ukraine as well, she didn't face anything. So I feel like bias and like where we put bias in place, yeah, media should be objective, but then as journalists we should have an opinion as well. But then like once one incident bias is okay, but the other incident bias is not okay. And then censorship happens for specific issues and matters across Australia as well, especially around Indigenous rights and what they need and the referendum. We have lots of censorship with the referendum as well.
Okay, so in America there's that, and then in Australia censorship is also great. What about in Indonesia, Pak Munadil?
I think similar, yeah. But I want to add one interesting thing now in media system in Indonesia now happen is AI is one of the challenge in media. I have one student, magister student, who research now media using AI, and it is very challenging in media, you know, because AI, if the media using AI, you know, that will be happen on the media worker, they will cut a lot of media worker, and then they will use some big data to report the media, and then the impact is about the lot of information. Some information is not that complete because maybe they use some resource from the social media and etc. So I think the future government also need to to regulate using AI in media system. This is one mention because one of my students now research about the impact of using AI in media. And then I have similar issues also about the global issues in media system, that media bias is very big issues, like in Gaza and then in Ukraine. What happened, and then like maybe perspective of Western and perspective of Eastern, it will be always same, but the journalists have one perspective that they should be cover both sides, yeah, so the consumer can get the which one is the right issues or right information that they should consume, and they should get information, right information.
Okay, so everybody knows about the covering both sides.
Yeah.
But in the implementation, is it as easy as we can say, Budevi?
It's not as easy. Being a journalist, you need to strive to overcome your own biases. Like, for example, I have a particular opinion about a particular issue, but I have to also seek out the voice of those whom I may not agree with. So it is always something that we have to put in mind. And also the wording. I'm very attuned to, you know, the words, the use of words. For example, we probably have read this word so many times online or, you know, on television, the word rebellion or rebels, terrorists, freedom fighters. The usage of words that we choose also will form a particular opinion, whether a particular criminal is described as depressed, a lone fighter, or he can be a domestic terrorist. So it's also up to us to be able to use the right wording to avoid making the wrong perception, I guess. And I think that's one of the things that Western media should be much more careful about, the use of particular words that are considered approved by the management.
Yeah, facing the management, because the journalists are not only facing the public, the informants, but also the management in their own media. What about in Australia too?
Yeah, wording is a big thing. I feel like because like you might not have an opinion in the article you're writing as a journalist, but through the words you're using, it shows your biases and like what side you're kind of like supporting. So being objective is something we all strive for, but it's quite hard to be objective. But then this is what our job as journalist is, to provide both opinions and then let the public choose what they want to believe in, let the public choose what they want to support. Our job as journalists is to provide the truth, and then the public will take it however they want to. Like, it is our job to show them what is happening around us and what is happening in the global context of the world as well.
Okay, so let the people choose.
Yeah.
But before we continue about this, I will not let you everybody choose the song on the playlist. I will pick one for you. It is a very short one. And after this, listener, we'll talk more about how media can bring cohesion to the community.
At RA Digital with New Look, various collaborative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcasts, live radio broadcasts, music playlists, podcasts, video news, and various users' interaction features in the game. Various interesting content such as live, comments and share, as well as live chat with broadcasters and users. Direct messaging and private chat facilities between app users are also available. RRE Digital, available on Google Store and App Store. RRE Digital.
Voice of Indonesia.
And you're still tuned to the Voice of Indonesia, and we're still talking about the press in global perspective, and still related to our president's address during the National Press Day, in which the president is asking the journalists to avoid news that can potentially divide the people. I would like to begin from Pak Mudadil. What is your opinion related to the statement of our president?
Yeah, I agree that what the president said about the press today, but I want to highlight about the government also should care about the future of media industry, because it depends on not only about the ecosystem, but about the regulation also. Because now, I don't know what happened in the revision of Undang-Undang Penyiaran, and etc. But it should be like modernized, about the, like I mentioned, about the using AI and etc. And also, government also should support journalists like for the they should like give many scholarship for the journalists to upgrade the education, and then knowledge about the technology, and then how media work not only in Asian but in American that like. And also the last thing is not only media, but the government also should educate the people to very sure about what is the misinformation, which platform they should seeking information, that if they get one information it like misinformation, so the people also can understand which platform they should trust.
Okay, sir. So, but we before we begin the dialogue again, I've just talked with Rowa about having one narrative. I mean, if only one media, one platform that is providing the correct narrative, that then the other is questionable. So, as you said, sir, if there is misinformation, there should be one platform that provides what is true and what is not. What do you think will happen, Budevi?
There's a lot of misinformation that potentially can spread on social media and even on traditional mainstream media. There are several media companies out there that rely on clickbait and sensationalism to attract viewers. That is part of the business model. The more views, the more money comes in through advertisements. And so for the media to be able to protect audiences and readers is to be able to really sift through that and not rely on sensationalism. That's one of the things that I hear, a lot of my friends would say, is this attractive enough? Is this the title? Is it interesting enough? But if you really talk about the real hardcore issues that everyone really can relate to, then it is going to be something that people read because it relates to their lives. So we really have to make sure that our consumers and readers are informed and call out anyone who is spreading misinformation and disinformation. Because I think it's part of our duty. If they are the users and the readers are unable to do that, it's part of the press's role to be able to call people out if they are misinforming or disinforming people.
Yeah, information is power, and apparently the opposite is not having no information, but misinformation is the opposite of having information as power. And if we back again to the question about if there are a lot of misinformation, how many sources that should we trust to have the correct information, Roa?
I feel like correct information as a term is very subjective. What I view is correct is different to what someone's view is correct.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the press needs to make sure that they're covering all voices, because nowadays with the rise of social media, we have citizen journalism, which is not just based on journalists who join the press and start sharing journalism and all sort of news agencies. We have now people on the ground have nothing, they don't know anything. They haven't studied maybe journalism, maybe they did. They haven't studied media, maybe they did. But they start sharing their voices. They start sharing what they kind of experiencing at the moment, because when they see misrepresentation or even the lack of representation in media and media outlets, they start representing their own selves through social media, and which is going to create the unbalance between the press and social media journalism, because now the press needs to account for all of these voices who are now on social media that might create misinformation as well in social media, and then it creates the imbalance that we have at the moment. Which one should we trust? Should we trust the people on the ground, or should we trust the press that we have our trust from the beginning? So I feel like this is an issue that needs to be tackled by the press to ensure that all voices are accounted for, all voices are represented, and all, everyone is on there, on the news, on the reporting.
Interesting. And talking about the social media, in Indonesia, we have a lot of homeless media. What is your opinion about that? Do you know what homeless media?
What's homeless media?
Homeless media is like an Instagram account providing news, or Instagram or TikTok accounts providing news, but they don't have the company.
Mm.
Unlike, for example, Radio Republic Indonesia, we have our Instagram. We use it to spread the news. But on Instagram, we have a lot. I cannot mention them one by one, but there are a lot, and a lot of people are getting information from that. What is your opinion about it?
I think it's not an it's not an easy issue to have. Like, yes, we need voices on social media, but then we need fact-checking as well. Because if we don't fact-check the news that we receive on social media, we could be easily misinformed about lots and lots of national and international issues. So that's the balance that I think we should have, is that the press could provide the voices and the trusted news that we think is trusted. And then we see people on the ground kind of saying the same thing, or like kind of reporting on the same thing that the press has already provided us. So we can tell, oh, okay, this information or this account on Instagram that shares news, yeah, I can see it on multiple media agencies. That means that this account is trustworthy. I cannot just like go on social media, TikTok, Instagram, or any sort of platform and just take the information from there. Fact-checking is very, very important.
Fact-checking is very, very important. And if we can see also the news outlets and also the social media, at newsroom we have news values, but on social media we have algorithm.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, they sound a little bit the same. This is the ones that create the criteria what is news, and this is the ones that will be viral. And a lot of people are worrying that the mainstream media is being left behind with the social media. So how do we balance between the news value, the news ethics, and also the algorithm of social media, Budevi?
I think the government can play a very pivotal role apart from the press, is to encourage digital literacy. Our cell phones, we are, you know, at the age where we are very, very powerful when it comes to trying to gather information. Anyone who has a smartphone can access anything, especially with artificial intelligence, with everything, social media, mainstream media. We've got a lot of choices. So how do we educate the public to be able to seek the truth themselves? I think that is an important role that not only the media but the government can play. Having a curriculum in school to teach about digital literacy, how can people sift through all that noise out there when it comes to information and seek the truth themselves? We have also, you know, friends who are fact checkers that basically give, you know, provide information about any kind of disinformation out there, and seek their services and their assistance, and to encourage the people to really think before they click. That's very important, because once we spread disinformation or misinformation, it's going to spread like wildfire. So in a way, we have to teach people to be more socially responsible in using it. I always say within my own WhatsApp groups, whether it's among friends or family, if I see something that I would say, oh, this is incorrect or this is not the truth, please check. I would encourage them to check and recheck with credible sources and have them erase it, because it is something that they spread.
Okay, and it is interesting talking about WhatsApp group of a family, especially. I have a lot of comments about the WhatsApp family because a lot of hoaxes came from there, from your uncles, from your aunts, which is quite sad because they are the ones who taught you a lot of things when you are young. And if Budevi thinks that the key is on people's or the readers' digital literacy, I would like to have an opinion from Pak Munadil. Is it from the government and the people, or do you think that there is another way to balance between the news value, the news ethics, and also the algorithm of social media?
I think we can deny it because the social media have their own algorithm, like a chamber and filter bubble. Yeah. Because the social media not owned, because they have own company from the overseas. Yeah. But the government should move to, I'm 100% agree with Budevi, yeah, that digital literacy should be from the beginning. I have one research about the media literacy that I'm very shocked about that. Many resource young people, they read a lot of many book. They didn't read a book because reading a book is one of the how the people have a critical perspective, critical thing. That's why these issues about the digital literacy should be one of the focus on the government to regulate, to push our education about this. Not only learn about AI, but about the how much the book they read. The curriculum should be push the student. This is not only in high school, but I have some problem in university. My student didn't have any book until they use the thesis. It's very, very big problem. But, by what they know the information only using Google, and then but when they facing defense of this, they didn't understand anything. They only should copy paste information, and then they didn't know anything. This is the big problem in our system. Yeah? But we now facing this. This is our challenge. But we should have any big movement to for our future. Yeah. The second is I'm also agree with the minister of the from DG that the young people should be regulated to use social media. I'm very, very agree about this regulation. I hope this regulation should be gone very soon, because social media should allow maybe until 18 years. Yeah? Before that, I think they should push our children to create a lot of book so they have own information and very critical about the any information they get.
Okay, so from our dialogue, from our comparison with the countries, we also see similar roles that we can play, similar challenges, and also it's not only about the media, about the bias, about the news itself, but also about the people who are gonna read it. Literacy is very important. So thank you very much, Bu Devi, Pak Munadil, and Rua for joining us in this short talk, morning talk about the press in the global perspective. Well, apparently, I believe that there are still a lot of things that we can say in this, but hopefully, this will be useful for all of us. Thank you very much for joining us, Bu Devi, Pak Munadil, and Rua.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Okay, listener, that is our morning talk about the press in the global perspective. You can listen to this broadcast again or to this morning talk again on RRI Digital and also our YouTube channel, VOI Official.
Listener, thank you for staying tuned in Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world. You can contact us to our Facebook fan page at The Voice of Indonesia or Instagram account at VOI_official and email address voilistener@gmail.com. I'm Nuka Kusumawati. Thank you for listening and happy weekend.
Voice of Indonesia 的华语节目。本台播送来自印度尼西亚的新闻、信息和娱乐。您能每天通过短波频率3325千赫。
和私企五五建合。本台的网站 www.voinews.id/mandarin 的流媒体直播以及 LRE Digital 应用程序收听本台的节目 Voice of Indonesia 从印度尼西亚面向世界。Voice of Indonesia 从印度尼西亚面向世界，听众朋友您好，我祝你身体健康。在今天的一个小时的华语节目，我想为您播放一些有关印度尼西亚的信息。我们还会播放一些在印度尼西亚流行的印度尼西亚歌曲，也有印度尼西亚美丽，将向您介绍在印度尼西亚的各地区的土道。开始本期的节目，请各位收听新闻。First of Indonesia， 从印度尼西亚面向世界，现在报道新闻。2025年2月12日星期三晚上，印度尼西亚共和国总统布拉沃·苏比安多亲自率别杜尔基共和国总统雷切普·戴伊布·埃尔多安和夫人前往巴基斯坦，这标志埃尔多安总统对印度尼西亚的国事访问结束了。此前在西加瓦茅屋宫，两国元首在进行双边会晤后，见证了印度尼西亚与杜尔基政府签署并交换两节备忘录。布拉沃·苏比安多总统在一份联合新闻声明中表示，会议讨论了各种形式的合作。在我们的会晤中，我们讨论了符合两国国家优先的思想的各种形式的合作。在经济贸易，我们致力于扩大两国贸易，实现互利共赢。布拉沃·苏比安多总统还表示，会谈中还达成了在宗教与教育、国防、农业、卫生等等其他领域的合作。同时，埃尔多安总统表示，印度尼西亚和土耳其同意加强在多个领域的合作。他说，合作涉及国防、能源、教育等等诺多领域的。
Bu çerçevede enerji, tarım，
我们签署了大约12项协议，涉及能源、卫生、农业、国防、工业、通信和交易等等领域。此外，我们还收到了一份我们共同签署的联合声明。在国际关系领域，两国元首强调，印度尼西亚和土耳其仍然认为巴勒斯坦合并的解决方案是巴勒斯坦独立和两国解决方案。印度尼西亚努山达拉首都管理局负责人巴苏基哈迪穆利诺透露，印度尼西亚首都管理局办公室将于2月底完工。此时，巴苏基哈迪穆利诺星期三在雅加达与国会第二委员会举行的工作会议上转达了此声明。